Now, I'm delighted to say we're off to my old stomping ground, the Isle of Wight, which is complete coincidence that our next guest is from there. We are going to talk about the life of the people looking after the aircraft for the test pilots of the world. And I'm delighted to welcome John R.W. Smith to the programme. Good morning, John.
Good morning to you.
How is the Isle of Wight this fine morning?
It's beautiful.
Oh, bless
you. I have to say.
Yeah, it usually is, isn't it? It's a wonderful place to live.
It is.
Delighted to talk to you, John, and particularly delighted, as I was explaining to you there, I'm a private pilot, and I'm in great admiration of the test pilots of this world who get on board aircraft that are untested and risk their lives, basically. But your story is a really interesting one because you were an aeronautical engineer and you were the working in partnership, basically, with test pilots. So tell us about your job.
Exactly that, yes. I started work at Avro's, which, as you, many of you may know, was the organization that built the Avro Vulcan, the Delta bomber.
Yeah.
I started there back in the mid-60s and I started there as an aerodynamicist, actually, and then moved over to become a flight test engineer at the same time. So that involved flying with the test pilot.
Wow.
Doing all the technical analysis, keeping all the tests in order, and between us, we did a lot of work that way.
You've just given me a childhood memory when you said the Vulcan there. That was the Vulcan bomber. And I remember seeing the Vulcan bomber do a fly past at the Bembridge Air Show on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, he did indeed. That was a while ago.
It was, absolutely. What a beast that was.
Incredible machine, incredible. Well ahead of its time, and it survived well into the... Well, up to the Falklands War. It succeeded quite a lot in the Falklands War.
So as a flight engineer, then, you say you actually had to fly with the test pilots. So you're basically taking the same risk as they were, except you had no control over it. You had no control over the aircraft at all.
Well, we had a little control over the pilots, but you know what they're like.
And it's a fascinating thing to do, because I guess what you do is you kind of test, come down, make some adjustments, go back up again and repeat the process.
Well, it's a little bit like that. One has a great long list of tests that need to be done to ensure the safety of the aeroplane, and you have to sort of go through them systematically month after month. And obviously, now and again, you come across something that doesn't actually meet what it's supposed to meet. And there we start talking about modifications and things.
Yes. And when you were doing that work, were there any moments when you were in the air where things went really rather pear-shaped?
Oh, a few, yes, a few, for certain. Yes, I think sometimes you learn a lot from the accidents or near accidents.
Yeah. Was it scary or exciting or a bit of both?
It was mostly, I would call it, very interesting.
Yeah.
Occasionally exciting and once or twice very scary.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I guess you would probably have had close friends and colleagues who lost their lives in flight test accidents, wouldn't you?
Well, certainly I did, yes. One of my very good friends, a test pilot, who worked at the Civil Aviation Authority and moved to Airbus, and he was the pilot who lost his life in that Airbus accident at Toulouse.
Oh, goodness me. Some years ago. Yes, is this the one where they were demonstrating the aircraft and it went into the trees?
Oh, no. This was one where they were doing some flight test work, which nobody thought was too dangerous, and they had some civilians on board, and they lost the place.
I guess these days, less testing is necessary because of computer modelling, or is that not a fair thing?
It is true to a certain extent, for sure. But even in the old days, one had... wind tunnels and things like that, so you could predict the worst cases usually.
Yeah.
So you knew where not to start looking, and you start looking at the easy ones and keep moving to the difficult places.
Yes.
But nowadays, as you say, there's more modelling going on, more understanding, and slightly less testing necessary. But conversely, aeroplanes are getting far and far more complex, so the interaction between everything makes more testing necessary rather than less.
Yes, but there's never going to be risk-free, obviously, flying. Nothing is risk-free.
No.
Being alive is not risk-free, frankly, but the risk is coming down and down and down, isn't it?
Well, I think it is. And certainly, in my time, it certainly came down over the years, but it's still... Examples like that Airbus accident showed you that if you just lost the place for a few minutes and forgot what you were doing and why you were doing it, it could catch you out.
How much has it changed as you observe it now with automation becoming more and more in control of the aircraft? And of course, we see the dreadful situation that happened with the Boeing MAX aircraft, 737 MAX, where effectively it was the automation rather than the pilot that had taken control of the aircraft in the wrong way.
Yes, I think that's a very good point. All the accidents... serious accidents that I know about and been close to have all involved some sort of automation going wrong,
yeah,
or not behaving as predicted or as understood. Mm. Whereas simple basic aerodynamics, even at high Mach numbers and things like that, are much more understood, and one anticipates one can anticipate what is going to happen much more.
And I guess, you know, the old adage that you had to turn it all off and fly the aeroplane is the thing to do. But, of course, in those tragic cases, they weren't aware what was going on.
Well, exactly. And, of course, with airplanes like the Airbuses, which are all totally fly-by-wire, you turn everything off, you've got no control at all.
Yes,
and so there isn't that option anymore.
Yeah, I once spoke to a friend of mine who's an Airbus pilot, and he said they have an expression when they fly Airbuses: what the hell is it doing now?
Yes, well, somebody knows.
I'm sure they do.
Now, not necessarily the pilot.
Exactly right. We're probably putting people off flying here, John. We need to be careful.
Now, No. I should have to go back to the basics. I mean, the safety analysis that one has to do these days is amazing.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, you know, the probability of an accident which loses lots of deaths in the whole aeroplane. You're talking about one in 1,000,000,000 hours.
Wow.
And that's a lot of hours. So that's the aim people are aiming for these days. And it's a very difficult task.
Yes, absolutely. So now with some of the aircraft that you've been involved in are just absolute legends, the Avro 748, Shackleton's, Nimrod. One in particular I must ask you about, that you participated in the CAA's Concorde Certification Flight Test Program. That must have been very exciting.
The Concorde was something else. It really was. It was just a dream aeroplane to fly in. It was just so different. Everything about it was so different, and yet so well organized, well controlled, and well certificated. I have to say, everything was dots and T's across that and dotted.
Did you get to fly? Yeah, presumably you flew in her, did you?
Oh, yes, quite a lot. Yes,
magnificent.
Very magnificent. Yes, it was a whole different world. You had to plan everything so detailedly ahead, because the flight path from takeoff up to the cruise, up to Mach 2 in at high altitude, and then back down again. If you didn't do it in that order, everything you needed to do, then you had to keep going back and over again and accelerating again, and it just cost a lot of fuel and time.
It's quite a
difficult test program to plan.
And I must confess, and I'm sure you're probably the same, I actually shed a tear when Concorde was taken away from us.
I think we all did. Very sad.
Yeah, and of course that was bad luck, really. I mean, it was bad luck, firstly, what actually happened to cause the Concorde to crash in Paris. But then, of course, it was even worse luck that then they had the problems with the airline industry having a downturn.
Well, I think the problem with Concorde, as we all know, was that A, the noise, and B, the amount of fuel it used.
Yeah.
And those two factors were becoming very dominant even before the accident.
Yes.
And it actually amazed me that Airbus and British Aerospace between them decided that they would solve that problem of the accident. And they spent a lot of money redesigning the fuel system and everything else.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, they realized that keeping this thing flying just for the sake of some first-class British Airways and Air France passengers was just not money well spent.
Yes, I don't think Greta Thunberg would have been a fan of Concorde, do you?
No. I don't think so, no.
To bring us right up to what's going on in the world now, John, as a man who's spent all his life around aircraft, you must look at what's happening now to the world in the coronavirus crisis, and particularly to the aviation world, which has been decimated, and wonder what it's going to look like on the other side of this.
Well, good thought. I don't know.
No.
I mean, I think inevitably it'll get back to something. But whether or not people have learnt to live without aeroplanes to some extent and don't fly quite so much, I don't know. I hear that British Airways are putting all their large A380s out to grass at the moment.
Yes, absolutely. It's an extraordinary sight seeing the pictures of the aircraft just parked up in airports. It's worse than 9/11, isn't it?
Yeah, oh yes, much worse. Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. The book is fascinating. Safety is No Accident, a lovely title. John R.W. Smith, we really appreciate your time and lovely to talk to you on the Isle of Wight this morning.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You look after yourself. All the best to you.
I will, and you do too.
Take care. Bye-bye.